He's Hacker.
I like a good serial killer documentary. He hasn't taken the pounding that wide receivers take.
It's just a pound job, and guys are tired towards that 4 minutes.
And he doesn't shy away from opinion.
I would be lying to you if I said I had not heard things. They're like a bad rash. You hear a lot of things. Some are true, some aren't.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Thursday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark, 1010XL, 92.5 FM with Dylan Denmark. The Hacker, Ryan Green, with you. Glad you are with us as we are now 1 week away from the National Football League draft. Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson met the media earlier today down at the Miller Electric Center. I was down there taking in said press conference. I got a lot of thoughts about what was said and what was not said when it comes to Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson. Is a Trevor Lawrence contract extension in the near future? Depending on who you talk to, what you believe, deciphering things, maybe, I guess. Maybe I'm leaning towards, yeah, sooner rather than later, just based on responses, reactions, certain people on social media that actually nailed free agency are back tweeting things about Trevor Lawrence. So we'll get into all of that. But there's a lot going on, bottom line, in Jaguar land as we are a week outside of NFL free agency. Guest lineup tonight looks like this. We will begin in the National Football League, CBSSports.com. My buddy Jeff Kerr, he does a great job covering the NFL. Let's talk Jags. Let's talk draft. Let's talk AFC South and more. Jeff Kerr, CBSSports.com, joins us in less than 20 minutes. Towards the bottom, a little bit past the bottom of the hour, here in the 8 o'clock hour, Jason Beatty in Orlando. He is the beat writer for the Orlando Magic, for the Orlando Sentinel. As Orlando and Cleveland, round one of the Eastern Conference first round in the NBA playoffs, Saturday at 1 o'clock. We'll preview Orlando-Cleveland. We'll talk NBA playoffs and more. Jason Beatty of the Orlando Sentinel joins us here in about 40 minutes. So we're absolutely loaded. We're with you till 10 o'clock. As always, we are glad you are spending part of your Thursday evening with us. Every night here on Hacker After Dark, we do kick it off with a big deal of the night and Dylan Denmark. Let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
Pre-draft media luncheon today down at the Miller Electric Center. A tradition unlike any other. I told you guys all week leading up to this thing that obviously we're not going to get a ton of information, but to give Trent Baalke credit, I think he's more forthcoming with information at this event than certainly what we've had in the past when it comes to general managers here in Jacksonville. Now, they didn't come out and say that they were going to draft X or Y, but, you know, little tidbits. Like, Trent, what's the protocol for talking to teams in advance? Maybe moving up, moving down. Trent said, I'm paraphrasing here, but yeah, we've had preliminary discussions. We know what it would take. What about trading up? What about trading back? Trent said he doesn't want to do that until draft day. He doesn't believe in it until draft day. Why are you going to trade up prior to the draft unless you know the guy you want is there? You know, kind of standard stuff, but hearing a GM say that, you're like, yeah, that's why a lot of trades don't happen leading up to the draft. That's why all the trades seemingly happen when said team is on the clock or another team is on the clock and you want to move up. My big takeaway from today, we talked about offense last night, right? To me, there's four positions that the Jaguars are going to target in round one. Offensive tackle, and the reason I think offensive tackle is in play is because Cam Robinson and Walker Little are both free agents after the 24 season. You have depth at offensive tackle right now. You may not have that depth a year from now. So that's why, to me, offensive tackle would be in play, even though they used a first-round pick on Anton Harrison last year. And, of course, wide receiver. Those, to me, are the two offensive positions in play. Tackle, wide receiver. Defensively, I believe the two positions that are in play are corner. I'm not breaking any news there. More on that in a moment. And edge rush. I've been pretty consistent on this. If it were me, if I was calling the shots, no matter who else is on the board, no matter how else my needs are, if Jared Verse is there at 17, I'm drafting Jared Verse. I understand that may not be as big a need as corner. That may not be as big a need as wide receiver. But the thought of Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker, Eric Armstead, and Jared Verse on my defensive line would simply be too good to pass up. I am all in on Jared Verse if he's there at 17. I don't believe he will be there. I've been pretty consistent on that. Although, again, the more mock drafts that you see, the more, about half of them probably, have Verse available at 17. And why is that? Jared Verse, to me, is a top 10 talent. But if you have three or four quarterbacks that go, if you have three wide receivers that go, if you have three or four offensive tackles that go, all of a sudden, all those defensive guys are getting pushed down a little bit. So at pick 17, where you may not normally have an opportunity to draft a guy like a Jared Verse, in this year's draft, where you could make an argument that 9 out of the top 10 or every pick in the top 10 will be offense, that will push defensive guys down the board. Obviously, corner is the other position on defense. I came away today, and there wasn't necessarily one soundbite, not one clip, just the vibe. I came away today thinking corner is where they're going to go, barring something unforeseen. Now, does that mean they try to trade up for a Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo or a Terrion Arnold out of Alabama? Perhaps. Does that mean they nab one of those two guys if they fall to 17? Yeah. Or if both of those guys are gone, do you maybe trade back, accumulate more picks, and maybe get a Nate Wiggins out of Clemson or a Kool-Aid McKinstry out of Alabama later on in round number one? But if I were a betting man, I would say corner to me is the betting favorite right now. Followed by wide receiver, followed by edge rush, followed by offensive tackle. I don't believe it'll be any other position. Let's hear a little bit from Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson from earlier today. This is, you know, I think this was Doug Peterson, if memory serves. Adding players that have postseason experience. The Jaguars had a major collapse last year, losing 5 out of 6. Did they have that collapse because they didn't have a lot of veteran leadership in the locker room? They're a young football team. Look at what they've done. Add Ronald Darby, played in a lot of big games. Eric Armstead was in the Super Bowl. Gabe Davis has been in the playoffs every year of his career. Darnell Savage was in the NFC Championship game. They added a ton of postseason experience. Mitch Morse as well. And today at the press conference, they addressed adding players with that playoff experience.
This is why you're seeing some of the players we've gone out and brought to this team. You know, Trent mentioned it. These guys are winners. They've been to the AFC or NFC Championship games. They've been deep. You know, Eric was in the Super Bowl, you know, and we need more guys like that, right? We have a young football team, but the culture is heading in that right direction, and just having more guys like that on your roster who've been there, done it, can help the players, right? Even coaches can help the players kind of punch through that wall. And, you know, it's my job to make sure that we continue to push and push hard and you know, get over that hump.
Jaguar head coach Doug Peterson. These cuts courtesy of our friends at Jaguars.com. Trent Baalke also met the media today, was sitting right next to Doug Peterson there at the Miller Electric Center. Trevor Lawrence and the contract extension. Now, he was not asked to address Twitter rumors, which there are some out there, but he was asked, basically, hey, Trent, do you have a timeline right now for when you'd like to extend your franchise quarterback?
I try not to force anything. You know, we've had some great talks, some great conversations. I spoke with his agency again last night. You know, we're working. You know, but you can't force this stuff. I said the same thing with Josh's situation. I said it would take some time. It did. But we were glad that it got completed when it did, so we could go into this offseason program knowing that that's behind us and we can move forward. So we're working at it. We'll continue to work at it. You know, ownership's involved, obviously. Coaches involved. We're going to put our best foot forward and hope to get something accomplished here.
You know, that to me means it's going to be sooner rather than later. There was a lot of conversation. Will it happen this offseason? Will it happen prior to training camp? That's when Joe Burrow got his last year in Cincinnati. That's when Justin Herbert got his last year in L.A. Based on that comment by Trent Baalke talking to the reps for Trevor last night, working, mentioning ownership is involved, man, doesn't it seem like they're kind of far down the path? Doesn't it seem like this could be something sooner rather than later that Trevor Lawrence is inked long-term here in Jacksonville? We know it's going to happen. The question is when, and based on that alone, I would say my timeline for the Trevor extension probably got moved up today, hearing that comment from Jaguar general manager Trent Baalke. So a lot to get into with the Jags. One week from tonight, the Jaguars have the 17th pick in the draft. Remember, Friday night, a week from tomorrow, head coach Dave Campo, our head coach on Hacker After Dark, he'll be in studio with us during round two and round three of the draft. Instant reaction to what every team does, but especially what Jacksonville does at 48. Not sure, Denmark, if we'll make 96 next Friday night. We'll see how it goes. That's like towards the very, very end of round three, but we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. We'll do our best. But that'll be fun next Friday. Myself, Denmark, Coach Campo with you during rounds two and rounds three of the 2024 NFL Draft. Coming up next, more on the Jags, more on the draft, and a little bit on the AFC South and what the other teams in the division are thinking heading into the draft next Thursday. Jeff Kerr, CBSSports.com, does a terrific job covering the National Football League. And he joins me next on a Thursday evening in Jacksonville, Florida. We're glad you're with us right here. Hacker After Dark, 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Moving phone line.
Back here on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The NFL Draft next week up in Detroit. Of course, the Jaguars hold the 17th pick in round number one. It was a very active offseason for the Jaguars and really a very active offseason entirely in the AFC South. Let's talk about all of it with my friend Jeff Kerr. You read him at CBSSports.com, and he's always kind enough to join us here on 1010 XL in Jacksonville. Jeff, how you doing?
You know what, Ryan? Finally ready for the draft to come. I get tired of the pre-draft stuff, tired of the draft next. I'm ready to go. Just tell me where these guys are getting picked.
No, I agree, and I want to get to the draft with you in a moment, but you and I haven't spoken since free agency. I think the last time we talked was at the end of February, and man, a lot has transpired with the Jaguars and within the division. Let's begin with Jacksonville, Jeff. In totality, guys that left, guys that came in, how would you assess the Jaguar offseason over the last month?
The Calvin Ridley departure kind of shocked me a bit, but you know what? At the end of the day, Ryan, I don't blame them for not wanting to pay Calvin Ridley that kind of money. I thought he was a little disappointing for them last year. He certainly didn't help them get out of their collapse. I thought they were wise spending their money on Gabriel Davis and, you know, making sure Josh Allen stayed in the fold and, you know, doing all that. I mean, there was no doubt Josh Allen wasn't coming back, but you still have to bring him back. But I was stunned a little bit that Calvin Ridley wasn't back, but Then when you see the contract Tennessee gave him, you're like, yeah, okay, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, and the Calvin Ridley thing, and well, let's begin there. I think that's an overpay by Tennessee. I'll be honest, he's a good player, and he might be a very good player for the Titans, but he is going to be 30 in December. The Titans spent a lot of money on Legarius Sneed, Tony Pollard. I mean, I get it. They want to get weapons for Will Levis. I thought that was an overpay. Getting back to Gabe Davis, it's interesting you say that. You cover the league from a national basis. Locally, Jeff, we like that signing, but that signing has gotten kind of panned nationally. Why do you think that is?
Probably because a lot of teams have seen Buffalo and saw the inconsistencies of Gabe Davis, but I don't think Gabe Davis is a bad player at all. I really like him. I mean, I would agree that there's room to grow there. He has to be more consistent as a receiver, but are you really asking Gabe Davis to be the one in Jacksonville? I don't think that's the case. I think it's a good fit, and maybe it's a lower pressure situation in Jacksonville than it is in Buffalo. And it's kind of crazy to say because they're both small market teams, but Buffalo's had the spotlight on them for so many years now. And in Jacksonville, it just seems like, okay, how good is Trevor Lawrence? And then the rest of it's like, okay, like I still feel it went unnoticed how, I don't want to say inefficient because that's not the right word, but Calvin Ridley's struggles weren't really focused on for much of the year.
No, I agree. I mean, there was issues where he had the wrong routes and it ended up in interceptions. Ridley was a good player here, don't get me wrong, but I think the expectations were wanting a little more. Now Gabe Davis joins Christian Kirk and Zay Jones in that passing game as we're here with Jeff Kerr of CBSSports.com. And Jeff, Trent Baalke, the Jaguar general manager, heading into free agency, said he wanted to get stronger and more physical on the lines of scrimmage. Well, I think they accomplished that. Mitch Morse, also from Buffalo, the brand new center here in town, and Eric Armstead from San Francisco. Your thoughts on those two signings?
I'm glad you mentioned Mitch Morse because I really like that signing. I thought Jacksonville wanted to get better on the offensive line. I thought they were a little weak on the interior last year. So when Mitch Morse was released, I'm like, oh boy, that would be a good fit for a team like a Jacksonville or a Tennessee, and ended up in Jacksonville. So I thought that was a great signing for him. Eric Armstead's a very under the radar signing, I feel like. Is he Eric Armstead from 5 years ago? No, but this is a guy that's going to help Trayvon Walker. It's going to help Josh Allen. I really like what Jacksonville has done with the defensive line. They needed to get more pressure on the quarterback last year. That's what I felt led to their collapse. And it wasn't Josh Allen's fault. It's just they didn't get anything else outside of Josh Allen. And I think they needed more pressure on the interior of the defensive line to kind of force the quarterback out of the pocket. So I really like the Armstead move. Ryan, it's weird. It feels like Jacksonville had a quiet offseason because you didn't hear like a lot of the big names get signed there, but I do think they cleaned up a lot of problems on this team so far.
Well, in the defense, Jeff, to me, I mean, that was an overhaul. You fire Mike Caldwell, a D coordinator. You bring in Ryan Nielsen, who spent last year with the Atlanta Falcons. And then player personnel-wise, you release Foley Fatakasa. You release Rayshon Jenkins. You release Darius Williams. In comes Eric Armstead. In comes Darnell Savage. In comes Ronald Darby. Trevis Gibson, who I think is a very under-the-radar guy. He had 10 sacks in Chicago in 21 and 22 combined. He is the replacement for Kalebon Chaisson and a better replacement. So I agree. A lot of under-the-radar, quote-unquote, things on defense. But I think this defense is going to be better in 2024.
Yeah, I don't think it can be worse. And look, you look at Ryan Nielsen's track record. Look what he did with Atlanta last year. Atlanta's defense couldn't get pressure on the quarterback to save their life for like 4 years. He comes in there, adds a couple like low-end guys like Kadarius Street. You got midseason Calais Campbell, Bud Dupree. Calais Campbell's still good, but these aren't household names anymore. And he was able to get the most out of Atlanta defense and kind of kept them in contention for the NFC South race. So now that Doug Peterson brought him in, I think you are going to see this defense emerge to the middle of the pack, which is really all Jacksonville needs, I feel, to at least compete for a playoff spot in the AFC.
Jeff Kerr, CBSSports.com. Jeff, you look at the skill positions on offense. Basically the same as last year. Obviously, Calvin Ridley gone, Gabe Davis in, Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, Evan Engram, Travis Etienne. Do you believe that is enough talent at the skill positions for Trevor Lawrence to succeed in 2024?
I'd like to say yes, but I'd be lying to myself. I think they do need to add some more talent there. And look, they really like Tank Bigsby too. You know, let's not keep him out of this. But I feel like their collection of receivers is fine. But do you want to beat the Houston Texans? Do you want to beat the Indianapolis Colts? I think in order to do that, you need to get a number one wide receiver in there somewhere. So maybe that's why I was so shocked Calvin Ridley ultimately left. Now, maybe Jacksonville's thinking, okay, this is a really good wide receiver class, and we got a pretty decent pick here. Maybe we trade up a few spots and get one. Maybe one falls to us. I mean, there are going to be some good players when Jacksonville picks, but do you overdraft a guy like Brian Thomas, or do you kind of trade back and hope you could get them later, or do you trade up and maybe get Rome Odunze or someone like that? It's going to be a very intriguing draft for Jacksonville in terms of trying to find a wide receiver.
You know, you're up in the northeastern part of the country. You do a lot of work in the Philadelphia area, but that's not that far from Baltimore. They brought in a couple of former Ravens, Ronald Darby and Devin Duvernay, who is, I guess, the replacement for Jamal Agnew. And my thought on Duvernay, Jeff, look, Agnew was a DB that was converted to a wide receiver and did an adequate job. Duvernay has been an all-pro as a returner and is a wide receiver. So I'm not saying Duvernay is going to be a home run hitter for them. But I do think when you talk about this wide receiving core, and I agree, maybe they need to add one in the draft, but you talk about Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, Gabe Davis, I think Devin Duvernay might be lumped in there. I think they're going to use him at wide receiver a little bit. What's your thought there?
Yeah, I would agree with you. So Devin Duvernay was looking for that opportunity in Baltimore, and it just never came because of Greg Roman's offense and because of everything they were doing. Then last year, he kind of was just phased out with Odell Beckham and Zay Flowers emerging there. And, you know, you had guys – it was pretty much there were too many chefs in the kitchen. So maybe Duvernay is going to get that opportunity. But I'm glad you mentioned Ronald Darby because Ronald Darby was on the Eagles Super Bowl team. You know, great guy. I can't believe it's – I'm pretty sure he's north of 30 now, which is kind of insane because he was with the Eagles. He was 24, 25 years old. But, again, Darby is – made a reputation as a solid corner in this league. And he could have been a great one if it wasn't for the knee injury in, I believe, 2017. And it really hindered him a bit. But I do like those signs. And again, they're under the radar signings. They were second wave of free agency signs that you're just like, okay. Like, they got a new team. That's great. They're going to be on the roster. But I feel like they're going to have more of an impact, especially now with the whole kickoff return rules changing. So that's where I think Duvernay is going to play a major role for them. A
couple of more for Jeff Kerr of CBSSports.com. Jeff, let's look around the division. You mentioned Houston. By all indications, people think they won the offseason. Danielle Hunter, Danico Autry, Joe Mixon, Stephon Diggs. They certainly are going all in on C.J. Stroud's rookie contract. What were your thoughts on what the Texans accomplished?
I love it. I love how they pretty much did whatever they wanted to do. You know, again, Hunter was the move I ranked as one of the best free agent signings of the offseason just because you're only paying the guy 2 years. He's been incredibly productive. It's almost a fully guaranteed salary. I thought that was needed there. And I love Jonathan Greener when he was in Houston, but you upgraded when you got Hunter. And I think Hunter and D'Amico Ryan's defense is going to make some serious noise for that. Now, here's what I don't get, Ryan. Why do you trade all that for Stephon Diggs and then basically just get rid of the remaining years of his contract?
Yeah, I agree. That was weird. They basically tore up the contract, so it's a one-year deal for Diggs, and they gave up a second rounder in 2025. I guess from Diggs' perspective, he wants to get one more big payday because he's going to be 31 by the time this season comes to an end. So I get it from his standpoint. I really don't understand it from the Houston standpoint. It's almost a one-year rental on paper.
Yeah. Do you think he's a bigger headache than what maybe is leading on?
Well, I think Buffalo was not hurt by getting rid of him. I'll say that. I don't think they are losing any sleep that he's no longer in that locker room.
Yeah, I agree. And it was just like minor things, right? Like I feel like now that's the new norm. It's you're not going to see T.O. doing sit-ups in his driveway anymore, but you're going to hear like these bits and pieces come out like, oh, Stephon Diggs was probably a problem during the season, or, you know, him making outbursts at Josh Allen on the side. I mean, Buffalo's lucky Josh Allen has a good head on his shoulders and, you know, that didn't bother him? Because could you imagine if – and look, I think C.J. Stroud's the same way, but he's still only in his second year in the league. What's going to happen if Stephon Diggs blows up at him because C.J. Stroud's going to Nico Collins or Tank Dell or someone like that? That's something I think you have to watch out for.
No, I think that's a great point. Quickly to Indianapolis, Jeff, they didn't do a lot outside free agency, but they kept a lot of guys in-house. They re-signed, I think, 10 of their own, including Grover Stewart, including Kenny Moore, obviously Michael Pittman. Quickly, what were your thoughts on the Colts this offseason?
I thought the Colts had to do what they had to do, right? They had to keep their guys or they were going to be at the bottom of the AFC South. And do I think Michael Pittman's getting too much? Absolutely, but that's what the market dictated. And you got to keep a guy like that, especially when he has a good reputation with your young quarterback and Anthony Richardson. By the way, that's their biggest offseason addition. Anthony Richardson's back and he's healthy. And I thought this was a playoff team with Anthony Richardson last year, and they were pretty darn close without them. So, yeah, I like that move. Honestly, Ron, I like the future of the AFC South. It was a division when I would do my national division power rankings, I would just throw every single punch at the AFC South and how bad it was. Now it's the NFC South, but the AFC South is a really good division now with Houston, Indianapolis, Tennessee doing what they're doing. Jacksonville, again, it's still a good team. I mean, this is a team that won, what, 9 games last year and they collapsed? So I really can't tell you who's going to win the AFC South right now. If I was a bet man, I probably would bet Houston, but it's April.
That's the beauty about the division. All four teams believe they can win it right now, and there's not a lot of divisions you can say that heading into the 2024 season. Final moments, Jeff Kerr, CBSSports.com. Jeff, that takes us to the draft. Next week in Detroit, the Jaguars own the 17th pick. Everybody's talking wide receiver. You have as well. Defensive back is also a popular position because their top three corners are Tyson Campbell, Ronald Darby, Darnell Savage. We'll see what they do there. But, I mean, when you look at this Jaguar roster, first round, second round, third round, what do you think the positions are they need to hit next week in Detroit?
Would you be too upset if they went after an offensive lineman, Ryan? Just out of curiosity.
No, because Cam Robinson and Walker Little are both going to have free agency coming after the end of the 24 season. And I agree, and we've talked about offensive tackle. That, to me, is probably third, but you have to think long-term if you don't envision Robinson and Little being back. And my caveat on this whole thing, Jeff, is Jared Verse. If Verse somehow falls to 17 – which I don't think he will, but if he does, and I have Trayvon Walker, Josh Allen, Eric Armstead, and I can draft Jared Verse, I'm sprinting to that podium.
Yeah, so it's funny how you mentioned Jared Verse because I do a mock draft every year, and I hate mock drafts. I can't stand them, but I have to do one, and I said my golden rule is I'll do trades. So this is what would happen if based on a player of need or a luxury pick, right? Well, somehow Jared Verse fell to 17 in my luxury world. And I was like, well, Trent Baalke is sprinting to the podium to get Jared Verse. I mean, he would be a tremendous asset to that football team. And I even mentioned this, I feel like he'd be a guy you would trade up for, right? If he's like there around 14 or 15, I think a lot of offensive tackles are going to go early in this draft because this is a really good class for them. But if you're Jacksonville, here's a question for you, Ryan. If Terrion Arnold, or Jared Verse are on the board and you trade up, which one you take?
That would be tough. That would be tough. That's why Baalke makes the big money. Look, you probably have more of a need at corner, but I would have Jared Verse as the best player on the board. Now, is that a position of need? Not maybe to the extent of corner, but it would be awfully, awfully hard for me to pass on Jared Verse if he's there.
Exactly. And look, you still got Trevor Lawrence on his rookie contract. So it's not like you can't pay these guys. And I agree with you. You got three guys there. And this is what I think is really tough, like coming out of Philly. If you draft a guy like Jared Verse, the first question is, well, what does that say about this guy who you made a first round pick? And for Jacksonville, it would be Trayvon Walker, right? I'm like, no, you can't think of it that way. You got to think of it as, oh, we just made a really strong group even stronger, and you pair Verse with Josh. Verse might get 10 sacks his rookie year.
You pair Verse with Josh Allen, that means you can move Trayvon Walker inside. You have Eric Armstead. You can move Walker around wherever you want. The thought of that is salivating to me. I would absolutely love that. Jeff, as we wrap up, CBSSports.com, you guys will have wall-to-wall coverage of the draft next week, as you always do. What do you have coming out in the coming days and weeks for people to look forward to?
So it's funny. I don't do a lot of the pre-draft stuff because I like when the draft actually happens. So a lot of my coverage you will see on CBSSports.com, it's going to be basically like a instant reaction type thing. Like what we learned on day one, overreactions and reality checks. I do them after every week for CBS, and we're just carrying it over the offseason. Free agency was a big hit. So we'll do it with the draft too. And you can bet there will be an overreaction to wherever J.J. McCarthy gets picked. If he gets picked in the top five, I'm going to lose my mind. So, but, you know, I think the one you guys will like is I rank every first-round pick as the moment they're picked. And I looked at this article from last year. I hit on a lot of them. I'm like, oh, yeah, this guy's going to be a stud. This guy's going to be a stud. It was like, you know, the Jalen Carters of the world, that type of thing, or C.J. Stroud. I think I ranked C.J. Stroud like the third best pick in the first round that people were getting. I'm like, hey, that's pretty good considering the two I had were one was rookie of the year, the other one was the other rookie of the year. So it seemed to work out.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. Jeff Kerr of CBSSports.com. Jeff, I know you're busy, man. Thank you for the time. Let's do it a couple of weeks after the draft. We'll kind of get a reaction from you around OTAs, and we'll see where the Jaguars are at that point. Thank you, my friend.
Yep, sounds great. Hey, Ryan, we're actually close to football. I cannot wait.
There you go. Jeff Kerr of CBSSports.com here with us on Hacker After Dark. And as Jeff said, he'll have instant reaction there on CBSSports.com next week as the picks roll in on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. That is the NFL side of things. We'll get back in to the National Football League in hour number two. Also going to do a little Major League Baseball in hour number two as well. But coming up next, the NBA playoffs start back up tomorrow night, right? You got two elimination games. You got Chicago, Miami, and you got Sacramento, New Orleans. The winners advance, the losers are out. And then the playoffs start as a whole on Saturday. And the first game out of the gate on Saturday is the Orlando Magic. After a four-year absence in the NBA playoffs, Orlando is back. They are the 5 seed. They are at Cleveland Saturday at 1 o'clock. Game 1 in round 1 of the Eastern Conference first round. Jason Beatty, the beat reporter for the Orlando Sentinel, covering the Orlando Magic. He will join me next to not only preview that series, but look around the rest of the NBA playoffs. Before we get to Jason, we like to give to you, the good men and women of Jacksonville, Florida, that listen to us here in the evenings on Hacker After Dark. And right now, I don't know if you know this or not, AEW, All Elite Wrestling, returns home next week. Dynamite at Daly's Place next Wednesday. If you want to go to see the stars of All Elite Wrestling, AEW Dynamite, Wednesday night, down at Daly's Place, simply be caller 4 right now, 641-1010, and Dylan Denmark will hook you up with a pair of tickets to AEW Dynamite at Daly's Place next Wednesday. Jason Beatty of the Orlando Sentinel talking Magic and NBA playoffs next on a Thursday night edition of Hacker After Dark.
Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The NBA playoffs get underway this week with the play-in action. Of course, Saturday, we would be down to 16 teams remaining, and one of those is the Orlando Magic. Back in the playoffs after 5 long years as they will get ready to take on Cleveland in round number 1. Let's head to Orlando. Jason Beatty of the Orlando Sentinel is always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Jason, how we doing, man?
Much stress-free compared to 24 hours ago when maybe, you know, we didn't know where the Magic were going to fall in the playoffs, and they could have been the play-in. We didn't know who they were playing. We didn't know when they'd be playing. And now that they took care of their business against the Bucks and got the postseason, the playoff clinching win at home, I have a better idea of where I'll be heading to the next week.
You know, Jason, it's interesting. Here in Jacksonville, we know all about late season collapses. The Jaguars might have had their worst in franchise history, losing 5 out of 6. And as an Orlando Magic fan, I was thinking it was deja vu, right? I mean, Orlando was just losing games to Charlotte and to Philadelphia and to Houston and at Milwaukee. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, you can't possibly do this to me, sports, you know, powers that be. And then against Milwaukee in the season finale, a game they had to win to secure a playoff spot, Milwaukee was trying, right? That was all their guys except Giannis, who's out hurt. And the first quarter didn't look good. But, Jason, I don't know what happened in quarter number two, but Orlando might have had their best three quarters of the year in the season finale.
Well, I think what happened in quarter number two was the Magic turned it up on defense. They held Milwaukee to like 25% shooting, and even worse, I think the Bucks only made 1 3 that quarter. They limited Milwaukee to 12 points in the second frame, and in my mind, I actually think it benefited Milwaukee to drop that game. Obviously, players always want to win, and if they're going to play for it, they might as well play for it, and that's kind of how we saw them start. But once Orlando took control of that game, you're able to, avoid Miami, avoid Philadelphia, and secure a top playoff spot. And for Milwaukee, if they had won, they would have been the 2 seed, and they would have potentially had to face Miami or Philadelphia in the first round. And I'm not sure that's the matchup they want. Of course, they still have to face the Pacers, who play at a really fast pace, pun intended. But the Magic stuck to their identity in the final three quarters. They tightened things up on defense. Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero, the stars shined. Jonathan Isaac came up huge, everything was just flowing the way it should in the final three quarters.
Jason Beatty of the Orlando Sentinel. Jason, the Magic won 22 games 2 years ago. They won 34 last year. They win 47 this year, more than doubling their win total of 2 years ago. How did this happen? I mean, I understand, high draft picks and whatnot, but it is night and day compared to where this team was even a year ago.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Jamal Mosley gets enough credit for the job he's done as the coach of the Magic. And, obviously I see him every day and seeing the work he's put in. But I really believe when you have success as a team, it's a reflection of the coach and the culture that he was able to put in from day one, the standard he sets, and the ability to hold his players accountable while also realizing that these guys are 20, 21, 22 years old. They're experiencing this for the first time. He's experiencing this for the first time as a first-time NBA head coach. And they're going through this process together, and it's pretty remarkable just to see the growth, not just from the players, but how Jamal has grown as a coach, the circumstances they found themselves in, and still the ability to get it done as a group. And a group that's been together throughout most of this time. Obviously after they added Paolo Banchero as the number one pick, that changed a lot of things. But you look at this roster, you have guys like Cole Anthony and Franz Wagner and Jalen Suggs that went through multiple years of losing to get to this point. And I think they all say that it was worth it to get to this point. But what happened was Jamal Mosley turned things around. He bought his team to buy in. He got his team to buy into his system and their belief in him and the belief in each other that they have. And they expected this. Obviously the way the season ended, losing 3 of their last 4 games and needing that final win to get in probably wouldn't have been how they would have liked to have gone, considering they could have potentially gotten 50 wins and been a higher seed. But at the end of the day, making the playoffs was their goal. Making the playoffs was their expectation. Now they've done it.
Well, and that's the thing. I consider myself as diehard a Magic fan as you'll find. I'm objective in a lot of areas because of what I do for a living. But when it comes to the Orlando Magic, I'm really not. I've loved them since I was 6 years old when they came into the league. And I was expecting a play-in, get me to the play-in. That was my goal. I mean, the fact that they are a 5 and very easily could have been higher than that, but don't get me wrong, I'll take the 5. I mean, they're above their head this year, right? They're a year ahead of where people are expecting them to be.
Yeah, absolutely. They are definitely ahead of schedule. They just missed out on the play-in last year. I mean, the fact that they were the final team last season to be eliminated from play-in contention and now not only avoid the play-in altogether, but potentially – be a 5 seed in the East. says a lot about this team's belief in each other and what they're able to do on the court when they are playing their best basketball. But it is pretty remarkable to see this type of jump, and it goes back to Jamal Mosley and why he should be a legitimate candidate for Coach of the Year.
Jason Beatty of the Orlando Sentinel. And look, this is not a one-off, man. You and I spoke about a month ago. Of this roster, Joe Ingles and Gary Harris are the only guys 27 years old or older. Everybody else is under the age of 27. It's insane when you think about what could be. Now, will there be some attrition? Yeah, there will be. But they also have a ton of money in the offseason. I mean, this likely is to become the norm down in Central Florida, correct?
Well, that's the thing. You know, when the Magic made the playoffs last in an 82-game season, it was 2019. They made the playoffs again in the bubble in 2020. But the vibe this time around when they make the playoffs this season is totally different because of the youth. You know, Jonathan Isaac is the last player that made it in the playoffs in 2019 from that team. But you look at the rest of the roster, you talk about Evan Fournier and Mo Bamba and DJ Augustine and Michael Carter-Williams and obviously Nikola Vucevic, and just the vibe around that team and the vision wasn't exactly there for the future. And that's why they eventually did have to blow that up as hard as it was to move on from, you know, some of those guys that put their heart and soul into the Orlando Magic organization. But with this, the fact that you have two guys who are so young in Franz Wagner and Paolo, let alone Jalen Suggs and Cole Anthony and Wendell Carter and some of these other guys on the roster, it is showing just how bright of the future the Magic have, because Paolo in his second year is an all-star, and now they're all headed to the playoffs. And, you know, who's to say what's going to happen in this postseason? But I've said it for a while now, the best thing this team needs is a playoff series. They need to experience that, because right now J.I. is only one of four players in the roster. You mentioned two other ones, Gary Harris and Joe Ingles, and the fourth being Markel, being with playoff experience. I mean, the fact that so many of these guys have never been in the postseason, and they get to experience this now as a five seed, really shows just, you know, what's to come.
It is Cleveland in round one, game one Saturday up in Cleveland, the four versus the five in the Eastern Conference. Jason, they split the season series 2-2. I would imagine Orlando, the way they're looking at it, is, I mean, it could have been a lot worse, right? The Cleveland matchup, it's going to be tough, don't get me wrong, but they can play with Cleveland, can they not?
They absolutely can. And look, I think in the playoffs, you know, you talk about, as I mentioned before, Milwaukee probably didn't want to be the two seed, because then they would have been then they possibly would have faced Philadelphia in the first round and whatnot. The bottom line is you have to play whoever's in front of you. And if you want to get far in the playoffs, you're going to have to play tough teams. Every team in the playoffs is there for a reason. But I think when you look at the potential matchups, you know, the New York Knicks would have been really tough. You know, I think the Pacers would have been another matchup that the Magic would have liked. But I think facing a team like Cleveland, they split the season series, as you mentioned. I think it's a really good test. I think it's a series that can go six or seven games. And I think it's a series that the Magic can absolutely win. You know, a lot of it's going to come down to how Cleveland shoots the ball and what the Magic can do on defense to slow down Darius Garland and avoid them from getting into the paint. But I think the Magic match up really well against this Cavalier squad.
Now, obviously, the organization is thinking loftier, but I'm going to go tell you my perspective, and I'm curious yours and what the vibe down there is in the Orlando area. Look, are we at the point where everything's gravy from here on out? Because I agree with you, man. I just wanted to get in. Now they're going to experience the playoff series. They're going to know what it's like to be in the playoffs. I look at this Orlando team almost kind of similar to Cleveland of last year. Cleveland finally got back in the playoffs. It didn't last very long, but you see what it's done for them now this year. And you hate to have that mindset, and I don't like having that mindset. But, Jason, assuming that, I mean, even if they get swept and it's competitive, I don't think that's going to happen. But are we gravy from here on out if you're an Orlando Magic fan?
I really think so. And I know some fans might be shaking their head and saying, no, we are a good team and we're not just here to be in the playoffs. We're here to win in the playoffs. And I think the players should have that mindset as well. They want to show that, hey, this is more than just a fluke or anything like that. We're here to stay and make some noise potentially in the playoffs and even win a first round series. But, when you go back to the preseason and the end of last season, their goal was to make the playoffs and now they're here. So, just from a development and growth perspective, I think the rest is gravy for sure for this squad. Now, you know, from a competitive standpoint, they absolutely all want to win and show that they're not just here to make the playoffs, but win in the playoffs, as I said. So, but from a large perspective, a big picture, making the playoff series was the priority, and they've done that. And whatever happens, happens.
Final moments with Jason Beatty of the Orlando Sentinel covering the Orlando Magic. You know, I mentioned the comparison between Jacksonville and Orlando earlier. Another comparable is both franchises were awful for the better part of the last 15 years, just awful. And the Jaguar fan base never left, right? They get railed on nationally, but that fan base was 45, 50,000 strong, even in that 1-15 year. I mean, this is a very passionate fan base. And now that it looks like the Jaguars have turned that corner, obviously the fan base is growing and growing. I look at Orlando in much of the same way. Orlando was awful for the last decade plus for a majority of that time. Yet the Amway Center is always full. It's among the better attended venues in the league. And now that it appears the good times are here, Jason, I mean, what is the vibe in that city like right now?
Yeah, the vibes are about as good as they can get for this team right now. I think, you know, when Cole Anthony had a one-handed slam yesterday and Joe Ingles hit a dagger three-pointer to put Orlando up 20 and force the Bucks to go to their bench, the Kia Center erupted. And this fan base has had their back all year long when you know, the Magic weren't on the national radar, weren't getting any national attention as a team potentially to watch in the East. So, you know, the energy in the building is high. The energy in the city is high. I think fans are excited that the Magic are back in the playoffs. And as you mentioned before, that this is just the beginning for this group. And I think it really, you know, lifted Orlando at times this year. I mean, they went 29-12 at home. That was tied for third best since 2000. And there were only two more teams in the East that had more wins at home, and that was Boston and Milwaukee. So this is just, you know, they took care of business at home and took care of home court and their fans at home. And in return, their fans are really, really excited. And the energy and the vibes are high for this Orlando Magic squad.
And like I told you last time, we're welcoming all the bandwagoners from our neck of the woods here in Jacksonville. Again, I don't need a breakdown of Jeff Turner and Dennis Scott and Anthony Bowie. You don't need to know those guys. Come on board. Enjoy the ride with Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner, Jalen Suggs. Jason, leave us with this. What happens against Cleveland? Best of seven. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the series goes six or seven games. You know, I'm not going to make a prediction on who wins. I think the Magic can definitely be in position to win this series at home in game six. Cleveland, of course, has the home court advantage, you know, but I think this is an opportunity to show that the Magic are for real, and they have a big-time player in Paolo Banchero. They have a big-time player in Franz Wagner and Jalen Suggs and Jonathan Isaac, two of the best defenders in the league, and Jamal Mosley is a real-time coach. And I just think making noise and showing that this team's legit, I do think the series goes six or seven games, and I could very well see the Magic winning at home in six games, which is probably music to the ears of Magic fans, but it's going to be tough. You know, the playoffs are physical. The scoring goes down. Every possession matters. Every game matters. And that's something this team's going to have to learn potentially the hard way, potentially the fun way, and maybe get yourself into a second round playoff series. But I think it's just an exciting time for the Magic.
And for the Magic, it tips off on Saturday afternoon up in Cleveland, game one of the Eastern Conference first round. Jason Beatty of the Orlando Sentinel. Jason, thank you as always. Safe travels to Cleveland, my friend. We'll do it again soon.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
9 o'clock hour is here. We'll take you up till 10 o'clock tonight. 1010XL, 92.5 FM, coming up towards the bottom of the 9 o'clock hour. My buddy Brent Beard, you see him on First Coast News. You get him weekly here on Hacker After Dark. The Garnet and Gold game in Tallahassee on Saturday as Florida State wraps up spring practice. We'll also put a bow on Florida, Miami, and Georgia as their springs are already in the rearview mirror. So Brent Beard at the bottom of the hour. Coming up next, Andrew Gibson, the host of River City Hardball here on 1010XL. You hear that program this Sunday at 11 a.m. We're about 3 weeks, a little over 3 weeks, into Major League Baseball. Most teams are at about the 20-game mark already. 20 games into Major League Baseball. Man, that goes quick. What's going on with Tampa Bay, Atlanta? Atlanta's got a lot of injury problems. The Yankees and more. We'll talk a little hardball. Andrew Gibson next on a Thursday night edition of Hacker After Dark. Jacksonville, we're glad you're with us right here on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Major League Baseball, believe it or not, most teams are approaching 20 games played already in the regular season. We're starting to figure out some trends in the world of Major League Baseball, and we have a brand new River City Hardball edition this Sunday morning at 11 a.m. With all that being said, let's welcome in the host of River City Hardball, my friend Andrew Gibson. You hear him every so often there, once a month on River City Hardball, and he's kind of like the utility infielder here on 1010XL, does a little bit of everything. Gibby, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, man. Appreciate you having me on. I want to compliment you on the weight loss, man. How many pounds are you down? That's awesome.
Oh, buddy, I appreciate it. Yeah, it was 52 and a half this morning. So,
wow, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you, buddy. Yeah, 52 and a half in less than 2 months, thanks to the good folks at Awaken 180, and I certainly appreciate you saying that. All right, let's dive right in, Gibby. I thought of you about a week or so ago when Strider, one of the aces of the Braves, got injured. We didn't know what was going to happen with him, and lo and behold, we find out it's a season-ending injury. Your reaction to that, and what does that do to the Atlanta Braves moving forward?
Yeah, there's no way to sugarcoat it. It's a tough blow for the Braves. Spencer Strider's the ace of the staff outside of Max Fried. Strider had overtaken him with the stuff that he's been able to have on the mound the last couple of years. And, you know, Strider is a guy that he's a frontline starter. He led Major League Baseball in strikeouts a year ago. He's got elite stuff when he's out there. But, yeah, it's a significant blow to the Braves. But, you know, the Braves did win a World Series without Strider. They did win a World Series without Ronald Acuna a couple of years ago, beating the Houston Astros. But, look, it's something the Braves are continuing to deal with. The pitching has been spotty in recent weeks. You know, they've had to call up some guys here and there from AAA back and forth to see who can work in and fit into this rotation now with Strider down. You know, Max Fried started out the year not so great, and so you've needed to see Max Fried do what we know he can do and be a frontline guy and step forward. But, you know, the depth is going to be tested, no question about it, for the Braves. And, you know, it's fascinating. Spencer Strider had a new procedure. It's not the typical UCL reconstruction that he had on his elbow. It's what's called now an internal brace procedure. And I actually talked to a doctor, Dr. Lance Snyder from JOI, is going to come on with me on Sunday morning on River City Hardball and explain what the internal brace procedure is. Hack, it's only been around 3 or 4 years, and basically what it is, instead of taking a tendon from your elsewhere in your body, usually they take a tendon from your wrist or your knee to do the Tommy John surgery to replace the UCL. And what they do now with this internal brace is they take what they call like a high-strength suture, and it's basically a high-strength fiber that they put into your elbow instead of the tendon, and you're back in half the time. He said he's had patients that instead of a year-plus recovery from Tommy John, they're back in game type situations in 6 months. And so that's what Spencer Strider has had. He's going to be out for the rest of the year, but he'll be back hopefully good as new by spring training in 2025.
Andrew Gibson, the host of River City Hardball. You'll get that program Sunday here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Gibby, final thought on the Braves about three and a half weeks in. How would you assess where they are at the early point of the year?
I think they're in a good spot. You know, the Braves are 11-5 as we sit right now. They're going to be playing here later in a couple hours. But, you know, through a couple games now, 3 weeks of the season, 11-5 is a pretty good place to be if you're the Braves. They're sitting atop the National League East with the Phillies a game behind them. But, look, given the fact that Strider's gone down for the year, Fried didn't start out so hot. Ronald Acuna has been struggling a little bit out of the gates. And so given all that, you'd expect, wow, the Braves are probably not doing so well. But they sit right now at 11-5, and I think you have to be encouraged by that. You know, a guy that's been incredible so far this year is Marcelo Zuna, a guy that, you know, in his upper 30s right now, mid to or upper 30s, has been absolutely incredible. Ozuna's got a 15-game hitting streak. He had a monster get home run the other night on Sunday against the Marlins to really save the Braves from losing 2 out of 3 in Miami. And Ozuna did it against his former team, a 3-run homer in the 9th inning to propel the Braves to victory in that one. So, they've had certain different guys step up. Jared Kelnick has been a guy that has played in left field for the Braves. He is a guy that they got in a trade from Seattle, has been outstanding. He's been a total upgrade over what they had last year in left field with Eddie Rosario and Kevin Pillar and whoever else you want to put out there. But what's really going to be the test for the Braves is, gosh, they keep getting injuries. Ozzie Albies, their all-star second baseman, has a broken toe, and so he's going to be out for, gosh, you would think, a couple weeks with that. And so Strider being down, Ozzie being down, Acuna not playing up to his level, and yet the Braves are still at a good clip right now, 11-5.
The man is an absolute encyclopedia when it comes to Major League Baseball. My buddy Andrew Gibson here with us on Hacker After Dark. Gibby, let's go south to Tampa. They've kind of righted the ship a little bit. Didn't start out great, but they're a little bit over 500 as the time you and I are talking. How about this for a scheduling anomaly? They wrapped up a series with the Angels earlier today. Tampa Bay and Anaheim are done. They don't play again, and Anaheim actually doesn't play the Red Sox again either. They're done with the Red Sox and the Rays, and we are sitting here in the middle part of April. Just wild that that's how the season started for the Angels. From the Rays' point of view, again, a slow start, but at least they're getting back at the 500 or slightly above the 500 mark right now.
Yeah, the Rays, again, as we talked early in the season, there are going to be guys that step up for the Rays that you've probably not heard too much of. But you look at the Rays where they are, it's a very competitive division in the American League East. You got the Yankees, they're playing really well, 12-6. Baltimore's up there. The Rays are currently double-digit wins right now through the first 18 or 20 games or so for the Rays. And I look at Randy Arozarena maybe not having the kind of start he's had in recent years, but Isak Paredes is having a good year so far. We mentioned that the depth of pitching has been certainly tested for the Tampa Bay Rays, but you look at a guy like Aaron Civale, who came over from Cleveland last year. Man, that guy has been outstanding so far. He's got a 2.74 ERA, a whip of 0.91. Every time he gets out there, he's really putting up a good effort. Zach Eflin is the ace of the Rays right now, and he's going to have to continue to pitch very well if the Rays are going to have a chance to continue to be the team that everybody thinks they can be. Again, the Yankees are starting off so hot, so we'll see what they continue to do. But look, it's going to be guys that are just really good major league players, maybe not the high profile names, but that's what the Rays do every single year, is they have guys that continually develop through their program. Their scouting, I've argued this forever, Hack, the scouting of the Tampa Bay Rays has to be the best in baseball, because they find a guy every year, don't they? I mean, it's a guy or two that, man, I've never heard of this guy. He's hitting 370 through the first couple of weeks of the season, but the Rays continue to find and uncover gems, and they're continuing to do that in 2024.
Give me a pleasant surprise 3 weeks in, a team that you didn't expect much out of that's off to a pretty good start.
I think it has to be the Pittsburgh Pirates. Congratulations to Frank Frangie and his crew. The Pirates are really good. They've performed, I think, above anybody's expectations. I think they expected to have a pretty good bullpen. They weren't sure about the starting pitching, and it's been flip-flop. The starting pitching has been outstanding. This guy Jared Jones has come in and looked like Jacob DeGrom through the first couple of starts in his career. They've had, guys that have been veterans that have come in and performed really well. But and look, they have Paul Skeens down at AAA. Remember, the standout pitcher out of LSU is just mowing down hitters at AAA, hitting triple digits on almost every pitch. He's been limited in his pitch counts, though. They've not let him go very far in games. I think the furthest he's gone is maybe 3 or 4 innings. He might have gone 5 recently, but that's about it. So they're grooming and preparing for Paul Skeens to make his major league debut. I would think it's probably less than a month away. I'd say Skeens is probably called up by somewhere in the first week of May. I'd be stunned if it's not, if it's after that. But at some point, and look, they're playing well. You know, sometimes these teams get off to a tough start, and that's when you want to call up the top prospect is, hey, we need a spark. We need to call somebody up. Well, the Pirates are pretty good. And so that's even going to put even more wind in their sails. Hey, we're good. And now we're going to call up this guy, Paul Skeens, who's been absolutely dominant at AAA. I think the big surprise, the pleasant surprise for me has been what the Pittsburgh Pirates are doing, 11-12 wins already this year.
Final moments, Andrew Gibson, the host of River City Hardball here on 1010XL. You'll hear that program on Sunday morning at 11 a.m. Opposite question, Gibby, a team 3 weeks in that maybe is not meeting expectations so far.
You know, I think a team like the Minnesota Twins is where I would go with this one, because the Twins have a pretty good team. They have, you know, they've also dealt with injuries. Pablo Lopez is their top pitcher. You know, Rocco Baldelli's their manager, you know, a former Ray, a guy that's really been a really good manager. I mean, he's been a very, very solid manager there in Minnesota, but they're starting out scuffling. They're 6-10 to start the year, and he came out and blasted the team, basically saying that we're not hitting, we're not pitching, we're not doing what you need to do to win games, and kind of went on a scathing rant about his team this week. And so I would say that's probably the team that I look at and say, hey, the Twins are probably better than that. But you know what? Maybe a team that's even down further than that is the Houston Astros. The Astros are 6-13. The Braves have already won the series against the Astros. They're going for the sweep here today. And, you know, Houston is just not that good right now. And that's a surprise to probably everybody. And I think the reason for that is, yeah, they've still got Bregman. They've still got Altuve. They've got Kyle Tucker. They've got Yordan Alvarez. So why are the Astros not good? They've had really, really tough luck with pitching injuries. And one of their beat writers, Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle, has basically called out the team for not going after more pitching in the offseason. They, Framber Valdez has been down. Justin Verlander hasn't thrown a pitch yet this year. He's supposed to start later this week. I think Friday is the 2024 debut for Justin Verlander is what they expect. But they didn't really go after any starting arms in the offseason, and that's been a criticism of the Astros. And right now it's showing up, and the Braves have put a number on them in the first couple of games of the series against them in Houston.
All right, Gibby, another edition. River City Hardball, Sunday morning, 11 a.m. right here on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. What can baseball fans around the city of Jacksonville look forward to here this week on River City Hardball?
So this Sunday at 11 a.m., we're going to have the head coach of Tocoi Creek, Hack, one of the newer schools in St. Augustine. Tocoi Creek has been really good this year. Philip Wisser, the head coach of Tocoi Creek, is going to be in studio. He's going to bring in a couple of his senior players. We're going to find out here, I think Friday, he's going to let me know which guys he's going to bring in. But looking forward to having a couple seniors come in from Tocoi Creek. They went on a terrific run, a winning streak of 14, 15 games that really was very nice to see. A team like this, only a couple years of existence, but Tocoi Creek is going to be represented 11 a.m. They'll be the first interview in the show. Philip Wisser, the head coach, he's going to bring in two of his senior players live in the studio, so that's going to be a cool opportunity for those guys and for us to have them on. In the second segment, we're going to have Dr. Lance Snyder from Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, doc from JOI. He's a specialist on elbow injuries. We had a fascinating conversation offline this week. We're going to have it again on Sunday morning about 11:20 is when we're going to have Dr. Lance Snyder. Look, there's been a lot of elbow injuries. Tommy John's have been a lot of hot topic. We just talked about Spencer Strider. And Doc's going to explain the procedure that Spencer Strider just had that's hopefully and maybe going to get him back earlier than expected next year. He'll explain why he thinks that there have been some Tommy John surgeries in recent weeks, that a lot of the guys that are having these, what's the reason? How do you fix it? How do you fix the issues that we're having with the elbow? He's going to explain all that. And he's also going to talk about if you have a pitcher, if you're a parent of a child here in Jacksonville that throws 90 plus, how do you handle your child? You know, what advice do you give to them? So a really good conversation coming up with Dr. Lance Snyder from JOI. And then We're also going to have on the shortstop of Florida State. The Noles are playing very well. Alex Lodis is from the Jacksonville area. He's from St. Augustine. He went to Bartram Trail High School, and he's now the shortstop for the Florida State Seminoles, ranked in the top 10 in the country. They're playing very good baseball. I know they lost last night, I believe, to Mercer, one of those midweek games. But Florida State is, under Leek Jarrett, has really turned things around. They're a top 10 program and only climbing higher. So a lot coming up on Sunday, and it's all presented by DBAT Jacksonville, our friends over there on Powers Avenue, and their new location in Green Cove Springs.
Absolutely jam-packed show. River City Hardball, Sunday morning, 11 a.m., with your host, Andrew Gibson. Gibby, always appreciate it, man. We'll be listening Sunday morning, brother. Thank you, as always.
Always a pleasure to be on, man. Appreciate it.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Florida, Georgia, and Miami wrapped up spring football this past weekend with their spring games. Florida State has the Garnet and Gold game this Saturday over in Tallahassee. And lo and behold, here we are in mid-April, and the transfer portal is back open. With all of that, let's go to my buddy Brent Beard. You see him locally on First Coast News, and you get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. Mr. Beard, how are you, sir?
Well, it's a wonderful time of year. With portals and spring games that are going on. We're a little over a month from the first preseason magazine, by the way.
Oh, that's a holiday for Brent Beard.
That's mind-boggling in itself. I'm not sure I would want to be a writer for one of the magazines the way the rosters will be. It's so different over the next week or so. But regardless, we keep up with it. We enjoy it, and away we go.
Brent, we'll talk spring games mostly, but quickly, because you're on the roster configuration, the portal is back open. And for the casual college football fan, in your opinion, biggest difference, the April transfer portal window compared to the transfer portal window we have back in December?
Yeah, it's not even close. The one in December is much more active as far as particularly for the SEC. And the reason is for this portal, you can't transfer, say, from Georgia to Florida. That is not allowed, and that cuts down on a lot of the portal. That doesn't mean teams won't be in the portal. For instance, Kirby Smart, Georgia's coach, has been transparent in that they're going to get another quarterback in the portal if they can do it, because they need the quarterback depth. That coaches talk this time of year about when we need to get our running back room full or quarterback room full or something like that. So you'll see some of that, but that's the biggest difference is for most of our listeners is you won't see any intra transfers within the SEC, but it starts today and it goes through, and it basically goes for 2 weeks.
Brent Beard, you see him locally on First Coast News. You get him weekly here on Hacker After Dark. And Brent, final thought on the portal. Basically, the reason it's open now, one of the reasons, spring football for a lot of schools is in the rearview mirror, and guys look at depth charts, right? Guys know what the last 15 practices were. All right, if I'm third on the depth chart, if I got beat out in spring ball by so-and-so, odds are I'm going to be behind him in the summer and the fall. Let me get out of here and look for greener pastures elsewhere, correct?
No question. That's very true. The spring window is a prime opportunity for programs to unload players they don't think are going to be very effective and open scholarship slots for others. Look, that's just the way it is. People may not like that, but that is what happens in the spring. It is basically fine-tuning your roster in order to get ready for the upcoming season.
All right, Brent, let's head to Gainesville. The Gators had the orange and blue game this past Saturday. Good crowd down in Gainesville. 48,000, I think, is what they reported. Certainly a very improved crowd over years past. I guess that's what happens when the game is back on Saturday afternoon instead of Thursday night like it was the last couple of years. Brent, your biggest takeaways from the orange and blue game in Gainesville on Saturday?
Well, I think both the quarterbacks were solid. Langway, who everybody wanted to see, DJ Langway, the freshman, 12 of 21 for 173 and a couple of touchdowns. He did throw a pick, but that is just going to happen. I mean, Graham Mertz is solid. He threw 27 passes, completed 15 of them for 253. I think that's going to work. That's going to be a good, really combination, frankly. And then Trey Wilson obviously is really good. He's going to make a real difference. I thought they tackled better, which they really needed to see that they could do that after missing 116 tackles last year. That's going to be cleaned up. Hank, the other thing's going to be cleaned up. They're still having way too many of these silly mistakes. I mean, how far were they in the game before they had only 10 men on the field? So those are things that have got to change, and they've got to change overnight, frankly. I mean, there was some improvement in it, but it's still there. And look, as we saw last year, particularly in an SEC game, you continue to make mistakes like that and not really deal with it. That's going to cost you a game or two, which is not going to work out real well in Gainesville.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And look, you try not to get too high or too low on a spring game. I mean, it is what it is. It's a glorified scrimmage, and games don't start counting for 4+ months. But this young man, Jaden Ball, the running back, who was originally an Arkansas commitment, and I know Alabama and Florida were fighting over him at the end. He ends up coming to the Gators. Between him and L.J. McCray, the big five-star defensive lineman, Brent, everybody talks about Lagway, and with good reason. But man alive, for what it was with a spring game, and keep that in mind, boy, McCray and Jaden Baugh, they certainly look like they might have something there.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, absolutely. And McCray really kind of stood out more to me. But I would agree. And that's what – people need to dig down a little bit deeper after the quarterbacks. Ball was 12 carries, 77 yards. Also, did you see some hope for Jakeem Jackson, too, that had 5 carries for 60 yards? I agree with what you say about spring games, because a lot of times guys who play well in the spring games, they're playing for someone else in the fall, but at least these guys caught our eyes. Montrell Johnson is going to be fine. And frankly, Hank, when you think about it, look, this defense could be pretty consistent. It could be pretty dangerous at times. If they can put all the way around, if they can get special teams up and going the way that it needs to be. Look, I'm not predicting anything more than what you and I have talked about, but this team could play better than we think it might.
You see Brent Beard on First Coast News. You also get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. So the Gators wrap up spring ball. The Miami Hurricanes wrapped up spring ball. And Brent, as we've talked about over the last couple of weeks, certainly it's all Cam Ward all the time in Miami. He's certainly the hope heading into 2024.
He's the best quarterback potential that they've had, frankly, in quite some time. I mean, he was 18 to 28 for 275 and 3 touchdowns. I had a friend in the media that texted me that he was there for the game, and he said, is Ward that good or is our defense that bad?
Maybe so, equal measures of both.
It could be. Yeah. I mean, you know Xavier Restrepo is going to be good. Isaiah Horton, they call it 6 for 88. Restrepo was 7 for 113. Jacoby George had a 24-yard touchdown. So I mean, there's some. I think there's some certainty, some real hope for them. To me, they've got, like Florida, they've got to replace their safeties in James Williams and Kitchens from last year, and that's a thing that they are, I think, quite concerned about. C.J. Clark, the defensive tackle, he did a pretty good job. Nickel, Mash Powell, with pretty steady in the secondary. They lack Bobby Pruitt, Marquise Lightfoot, just throwing some names out for folks to pay attention to. They had the game at the soccer stadium, which only seats about 5,000, and they wanted to do that just for the recruits in the area who they could come. So there's no doubt that Ward gives them an optimism that they probably have not had in a while. A
couple of more for Brent Beard. Up in Athens, the Georgia Bulldogs, they've picked up some good steam on the recruiting trail as of late. They're wrapped up their spring. And again, Carson Beck and the Dogs look to be very, very good again here heading into 2024.
Well, they just reload. We use that term a lot, but it really is true for Georgia. Mikael Williams, at outside linebacker, is a guy that has stepped it up. Malachi Starks, Small Munden, they're out with injury, but you know that they will be fine. And then they will do good. Carson Beck is to the point now to where they don't even spend a lot of time talking about him, because they know that he's probably going to be and is a Heisman candidate for this year. Dominic Lovett from the Missouri transfer has really stepped up. Ra-Ra Thomas, who came over from Mississippi State, is playing well also. And Kobe Young, who is a Miami, Florida transfer, is also doing well at wide receiver too. Oscar Delp, they think, is going to be a really good tight end. I mean, look, does this sound like a broken record, Hack, going over and over this? And that's just kind of who they are and what they have developed into being. Now, it's not all perfect. Andrew Paul, one of their running backs, is transferring out. I'm sure he probably read the writing on the wall and decided he needed to go somewhere else. And again, they start the season with Clemson and Atlanta in that quote-unquote neutral site game now. But all in all, I mean, they are who they are. They will be probably preseason number one, or maybe at worst number two. But yes, that this is a very, very good football team that is going to be, I think, probably who we think they will be.
And look, they need to start with their pedal to the floor. You mentioned Clemson, and then Alabama's mid-September,
yes.
Right? I mean, they got a pretty tough start for the Dogs, unlike, you know, years past.
Yeah, well, actually last year when people laughed at it, the reality is you've got the Alabama game is on September the 25th. So
okay, September.
But to your point, it's a good point, is they've got tough games in September, so being ready to go at a fall camp is going to be a priority for them.
Yeah, you play Clemson and Alabama inside of a month from each other. That's a heck of a start to the season,
sure
no
is.
Question about it. Wrapping things up with Brent Beard. You see him locally on First Coast News. You get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. That brings us to Florida State, the Garnet and Gold game on Saturday. Boy, a lot of change for the Noles, Brent. They lost a lot of guys that wore the Garnet and Gold last year. We'll hear their name called next week in Detroit at the NFL Draft. They have done a good job in the portal. They have done a good job recruiting. They're going to be able to replace guys, but there may be some growing pains, because I don't know if you can replace that many guys that they lost in this quick amount of time.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. That's going to be a real problem for them. And look, to me, the number one thing is going to be DJ Uiagalelei and how well he's going to do. He'll be limited, I'm sure, but at the same time, you want to see some improvement from him. Now, look, he's had 40 starts, so he knows what he's doing, but the problem is he sometimes throws the ball too hard and does put enough touch on it. And the other thing is, as far as reading defense, is going to have to improve your typical quarterback situation here. Marvin Jones Jr. on defense has really come up, and I think they're very pleased with where he is going to be. Also, they've got some younger guys, Akeem Hicks, Jaylen Brown, that they're keeping an eye on as far as improvement. They've got some linebackers that need to step up. And I think that's to your point on both sides of the ball, that they lost some really good guys. I mean, that they're conference champions defending the crown. They're not as loaded as Georgia is, but they've certainly got a lot of players that they can feel good about. Now, they didn't have defensive back Greedy Vance Jr. has entered the transfer portal, so you'll see some of that at Florida State as you will elsewhere, as they kind of mix and match a little bit over the next couple weeks.
Brent, final question. When it comes to Florida State, when you take into account graduation, NFL declarations, attrition in the portal, do you still consider them the overwhelming favorite in the ACC this year?
I think they'd be close to it. I mean, we talked about Miami. They've got a better quarterback, but is the defense much better? I mean, again, the main opponent's going to be Clemson, and can Clemson, their offense is not where they needed to be last year. Their defense was NFL quality, so that's going to have to improve. North Carolina is kind of starting over again. NC State is always that, 7-5, 8-4 type team.
And they'll get NC State will get somebody during the year. They always do.
Yeah. There's no question about that. And you've got the what's going to be interesting is with the addition of Cal, Stanford, and SMU, and how odd that's going to be to think about an ACC game involving those teams. That there's going to be a lot of new stuff in the fall, but no, I think that's a good point. And I would say right now, yes, they've still got the talent in order to win the conference.
You see Brent Beard on First Coast News. You get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. Brent, next week we'll recap the Garnet and Gold game, and I also want to get in next week with you about the NFL draft. There's going to be a lot of SEC guys that are going to hear their names in round number one, a couple of corners from Alabama that you're very familiar with, a tight end from Georgia, obviously, a bunch of guys from LSU, and I'm curious to get your thoughts next week on those players and how you think their games will translate from Saturdays to Sunday afternoons. We'll do it in 7 days, my friend.
Good. We'll look forward to it, bud. Take care.
And thank you to my friend Brent Beard. You see him locally on First Coast News. You get him weekly here on Hacker After Dark as Florida State will wrap up their spring practice on Saturday. Of course, the Gators, the Dogs, and the Hurricanes have already put a bow on their spring drills. And now all eyes begin to turn to summer workouts, and then fall practice is right around the corner. Well, that'll just about do it for what has been a very busy Thursday night and really a very busy week here on Hacker After Dark. Why has it been a busy week? Well, because tomorrow we are off, heading to Tampa to see Kenny Chesney with the wife. Looking forward to that. So off tomorrow, but next week will be all about the NFL draft, and certainly looking forward to that. We got a ton of people to thank for tonight's broadcast. Again, Brent Beard, you see him on First Coast News. You get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. Thank you to my buddy Andrew Gibson, the host of River City Hardball. You'll hear that program Sunday morning at 11 a.m. right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. If you are a baseball fan, high school, college, or major league, that is the show for you. It's all baseball all the time, Sunday morning at 11. Gibby does a great job with that program. Give him a listen Sunday morning. Thank you to Jason Beatty of the Orlando Sentinel, the beat writer for the Orlando Magic, as Orlando gets ready for their first playoffs in 4 years. They have game one of the Eastern Conference first round on Saturday up in Cleveland, and we certainly appreciate Jason down in Orlando for taking time out for us this evening. And back in hour number one, my buddy Jeff Kerr, NFL writer, CBSSports.com. Always enjoy talking Jaguars, AFC South, and more with Jeff Kerr of CBSSports.com. Again, off tomorrow night, so hope you guys have an absolutely terrific weekend. It'll be all draft all the time next week, as it will officially be draft week when we reconvene on Monday for another edition here of Hacker After Dark. Dylan Denmark was your producer tonight. Dylan, great job as always. I'm the hacker, Ryan Green. And again, Jacksonville, thank you for spending part of your Thursday evening with us right here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. And we can't tell you often enough how much we certainly appreciate it. So for all of us here on HAD, have a fantastic remainder of your Thursday evening and a great weekend. And I will talk to you again Monday night right here on Hacker After Dark beginning at 8 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.